Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tron. Han, how are you this evening?
I am doing fabulous, Jim. Simply fabulous. How are yourself?
Oh, that's good. It's going good. Obviously, the weather has started to change up here, and we're past the Labor Day. We're getting a little bit cooler nights. You can tell the garden's starting to wind its way down, and it's getting to be the end of summer, I guess one would say. But other than
Jim? Are you getting a lot of rain up there?
Actually, we are getting a lot more rain than we usually have had up to this point. I don't know exactly if that's leftovers from all the tropical stuff that has worked its way up through the country or not. But that is happening.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's actually the cycle. Whenever we get a hurricane down here, in the breadbasket, you get more. I mean, the hurricane bring in the cooling of the weather, welcoming the fall, and you get a lot of rain. I mean, we get torrential downpour in the last week or so. So when it rains, it literally rains barrels, not buckets. But you get a lot of that as they move up the country. So it's a gift that keep on giving from the hurricanes that come across the ocean from Africa up the Florida, Texas, and all that into the Midwest. So that's your weather report.
There you go. Well. Obviously, welcome to Straight Talk. We are at episode number 88, and tonight's title is Who's Responsible? Not for the weather, but who's responsible when it comes to dealing with your project. Now, what we're going to talk about tonight, and this actually has been a question that in one way or another has been asked many times of Han and I. Who's responsible for this piece or who's responsible for that piece? And so we felt very strongly that we needed to do this show and talk about these things to give you the information so that at least when you get to the point of maybe doing your own project, or you might be in the middle of a project right now and don't have the right information as who's really responsible for what piece of this particular pie. All designers, all architects, if you want to say that, have a different process. But there's at least some similarities. It's like anything. Everybody does things a little bit differently, and there's different groups and different organizations, and that's kind of one of the reasons why it makes it hard for you to compare. Let's say, for example, us to somebody else, or Architect A to Architect B, or Builder A to Builder B, because everybody does a little bit different. There's no standard. There's no playbook that's exactly the same. So I wanted to start off tonight with, let's quickly go through some of the things that fall under the norm. The normal architect owner contract, which is established by the AIA, which stands for the American Institute of Architects. This contract outlines the things that are normally part of the scope of services, which basically means what you would be paying a fee for is the work that you should expect from your architect. And when I say architect, I mean the person who's actually designing and creating the actual image, the look, the design of your space. It could be a renovation. It could be a brand new building. It could be a lot of things, but it's who's responsible for that and what does the architect's role involve? And we're going to talk about the other people as well. But the architect is really responsible for several things, one of which is we're responsible for what's called the schematic design. That's where we take the thoughts and ideas that you have given to us, along with any information that has been created around, let's say you've got an existing building, we'll take that, or you have a piece of property, we'll take that. All the things that are available, we'll look at those and we'll create what's initial design. That design then, you know, some folks have maybe think that that's also what's called, they call it a bubble diagram or a blocking diagram, right?
Yeah.
But in reality, it's not that.
No. It's a lot more complicated.
It's a lot more. Yeah, it's rather complicated, and we're not going to go through all the particulars or that thing, but it's a much more complicated and thorough document that goes through a lot of things, everything from code, everything from constructability, integrates things like potential budget, all that kind of good stuff, and whether it's buildable or not, integration of your site, integration of everything from utilities, available, all the stuff that's in there. But that's a design, schematic design. Then it progresses to what's called design development. Design development is where, in a general overview, we have taken all those things and you've got a good idea as to what you want the building to look like, what the floor plan looks like, and we answer all the questions. What are the walls made of? What's on the floors? What's on the ceilings? All those kind of things. All those questions are answered, and it's fully developed to the point that we can then create those construction documents. Now, construction documents are what you might refer to as blueprints. That's the old term, not something that is used very much anymore because, one, they're not blue anymore. They used to be, but they're black and white now. Sometimes they're in color. But, you know, construction documents is what the builder provides a cost for the building and also what the building inspectors do for permits. They do a review. We're integrated in what's called bidding and negotiation. That's when we help you work with the bidders and eventually help you make a selection on who you're going to have construct the building and or the project, whether it's a renovation or new build. And then lastly, the construction administration, which is Han and I were talking about it before the show. Construction administration is actually one of those interesting parts of the work where we're there to help be your eyes and ears. We're there to be your advocate for everything that happens during construction. And it could be as simple as asking a question, what should I, you know, from the builder saying, what should we do here? We've run into this issue. To the bank who says, we need to have this application for payment certified. And there's just a million other things that we do in between that, from shop drawings, and there, you can name it. That's what happens during construction administration. Now, that little quick synopsis is what falls under the norm for the owner, architect, scope of services in a normal AIA contract. So everything else that is that happens, everything else that is asked for is outside the norm. So Han, let me, what are some of them? What are the, some of the things that, that we are asked to do that fall outside this, this scope?
Yeah, Jim, before we really get into it, let me help, and hopefully you can help to clarify. When we talk about who's responsible for what, we're talking about the normal AIA type of contract, not the design-build type of project delivery scenario, right?
Well, that's correct. We're talking about who's responsible for what in a normal, what we consider a normal process, where the architect is the lead on the project. Now, if you have the builder as the lead on the project, which would be like a design build or there's other names, and we're going to have an upcoming show on just that aspect of it. But that's a different thing altogether. What we're talking about is under the normal AIA definition, the architect is the lead on the project, and that's what we're talking about when we say who's responsible for what.
Right. So this is where the scenario where the architect is directly hired by the owner and represents the owner. Other scenario, that may not be the case.
That's
so
true.
Anyway, your question was what is some of the things that are not part of the that's outside of the realm of normal services that the architect provides. One of the first things that I can think of is site design. If for the most part, if site design may apply, we would like to at least look at the site for a project where the work is only done internally. Sometimes what's going on around the building can influence the outcome or the direction of the design for the interior. More from a functional standpoint, efficiency than anything else. But when we often talk about site design, we're talking about you, the owner, go out and buy a piece of land, and then what do you do with it? You know, who actually should be in charge of the design of the site, and at what level of detail and things like that? It's interesting. It's like Jim and I spoke about it briefly before we went on the air. Is that how important does the site design play in the success of a project? And based on our personal experience, it's very crucial. I mean, it's not a matter of just, oh, here's a piece of land. We just plunk a building here. We pave the parking lot, and off we go. It's not that simple. There's a lot of things that's involved in the design of a site. And how it worked with the building, how the occupant used the building, the flow of the traffic, both the occupant of the building and the vehiculars around the building. So there's almost a defined art in designing a site. There's a piece that I don't think that we have ever done yet. It's called master planning. So you look at a site, what you're going to do now based on your, let's say, your short-term business plan, and then how that site will develop to to meet your future needs in, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years. So site design is not the norm, and it's just not something that you simply say, you know, whatever, but it's something that it's an element of your project that should be looked at carefully, thoughtfully, rationally, so that it, you can get the best out of it, or the best possible use of it. Jim?
Definitely, yep. And site, and I like to lump the term site design along with site acquisition or site analysis. And Han, you touched on it, and it's very important. And one of the things that we love to do, and we feel it's very valuable to you, is the ability to be able to help integrate even in a selection of the property before you even decide to buy that piece of property, whether it's a building or whether it's a just a vacant piece of land, because there's so many factors that potentially we can help save you a lot of headache and a lot of money. We've got some real examples of over the years where Hunt and I have been involved in this stuff that this has come true. One particular project that comes to mind is a dentist bought an existing medical building built in the late 60s. And that particular building, I believe the dentist paid somewhere in the range of $350,000 for this building and property. Now, it's a great piece of land, a great piece of property in the perfect location, crossed off all the marks that we needed. The problem was that there were a lot of existing issues with the building, everything from right-of-way issues to utility issues, and actually part of the building was outside the building property line. It was on a next-door neighbor's land. And so there was just an unbelievable amount of things that had to be done in the way of variances and those kind of stuff to be able to make that project come to fruition. We accomplished it. But unfortunately, if we were to involve with that project earlier, we would have been able to bring that information to the dentist. The dentist could have used that in negotiation with the owner when they bought the property. And we have estimated that there was probably $100,000 to $150,000 more paid for that property than what it was worth. So when you look at a $350,000 versus $150,000, that's a substantial savings. Definitely we would have, paid a substantial amount of architectural fees for that kind of money and savings, wouldn't it? So
you can buy a lot with $100,000
exactly,
extra
exactly.
Money. Okay.
And we always say the earlier we can be involved in the project, the better chance we have of saving substantial amounts of money for you. Not for us. It's for you. And so, you save that kind of money, you effectively could easily pay, our fee to get the work done and still have a bunch left over to buy equipment. So, site acquisition is crucial. The site design is crucial. And I guess we like to say, don't leave it to the civil engineer. And we're going to talk about what they do. But the civil engineer, it is just one component of the team, but they're the wrong one to site your building. They're the wrong one to place your building. They're great at what they do, but they're not the ones who should say, okay, this is where the building should be placed and why. That's what we should do, because we understand the relationship of how you use that building. And we understand why you should use, this is your front door, or that is your area for the operatories, and all that other kind of stuff. So be that as it may, it's a pretty complicated business, but you're right. Site is outside the norm scope, but it's something that we do. Huh?
Yeah, you know, I there's a couple team. I want to call them team members, but no, a civil engineer. Like you say, they're great at what they do, but they're not trained to look at how a building is used. Okay, they're great earth movers, and we need them. But they should not be at the front of the project, making recommendation of how and where and things like that. They should work. You know, it's best that they work hand in hand with the architect. Okay, so that we can they can help us identify the weak areas of the site, and we can facilitate the ideal locations and how the site should be used.
I want to jump one thing into, Hana, and it's part very strongly with the site, and it's planning and zoning. Dealing and coordinating with the planning and zoning engineers for the city or the municipality of where you're going to be going is crucial to even evaluation of a piece of property. Planning and zoning could be the determination of whether a piece of property is doable or not. And we do that. That's outside the norm of the normal scope of the architectural contract, but we do that. We will coordinate with and deal with the planning and zoning entities to be able to evaluate what and how it impacts your property. Now, this also means to some extent, planning and zoning also deals with existing buildings. Let's say you've got an existing building. Let's say you've got an existing medical office building, or you have an existing, heaven forbid, a house, and you want to turn it into a dental office, right? We've heard that before. Yep. I got this beautiful house. It's got property. I can put parking on it, or maybe it doesn't. We're not sure. But bottom line is I want this house, and I want to turn it into a dental office. You know who you're going to talk to?
No.
Planning and zoning.
You know what, though, Jim? The best reason to get the house is because I got it for cheap.
Oh, yeah. That's a good reason. Okay. Not really.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times it could be you got it for cheap, but you're going to put in a lot more money into it. So we'll help you evaluate that. The bottom line is planning and zoning are crucial to determine whether the property or the building or the project will even happen in that location. And then reviewing of existing facilities is another one I've written down. Okay. That's not under the normal scope. But how many times have we been asked to review an existing facility? Sometimes after it was purchased, we prefer to before it's purchased, to say, we'd like to turn this into a dental office. What do you think? We do that, don't we?
It seems really odd, and I don't want to take any credit away from the good quality contractor. Okay, I read it often. The recommendation is to have a contractor look at the building to assess whether it can be used, and they should be part of the team. Okay. And again, you know, it's not a matter of who look at the building, but when. Like Jim say, if you bought the building already, we are in a repair and save your butt mode. We're not in the position to say, don't buy it. Okay. So when you look at a property with or without building, you should have your team look at it, help you assess it, whether it's a viable project. When Jim talked about this nice location, you know, that building that the dentist bought, if the information was provided to the dentist before it was purchased, it may be a different outcome. If you buy, for instance, if you buy a piece of property at the corner of an intersection, and you say, I can work with this, and I can put a drive here, I can do this and do that, the problem is there's a lot of zoning issues. Sometimes the zoning also deal with the Department of Transportation, so it limits on the things that you can do, but more likely can't do. Therefore, it makes that piece of property, regardless whether it's given to you for free or you bought it for dirt cheap on a song, it's going to be literally a nightmare and a huge investment in a compromise that may not be what you thought. So getting the people, getting the team together, the professional that know what to do, know how to do it, to consult with and advise you on whether it's a go or no-go project or site or purchase would be ideal. Not after you bought it and say, I need your help. Jim?
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, we've had plenty of examples. A prime example was a dentist over in Indiana who did it the right way. Came to us and said, I'm looking at these couple pieces of property. What do you guys think? We looked at them. We gave them a recommendation. We gave them reviews and say, here are the issues on this piece of property. Here's the issue on this piece of property. Here's the issue with you staying where you're at. Because he had an existing facility with an existing piece of property. And he said, you know, what are my options? We laid them out. That's the way to do it, because he then has all the information. He originally came to us thinking that the first piece of property that he wanted to purchase was the one to go with. Subsequently, when we went through everything, he found out that that would have been the worst decision he ever made, because it had a ton of issues with it, including things like easements that ran through it, which would have dictated that he couldn't even have built the building where he thought he was going to be able to put the building. And remember, a lot of this stuff came from people like realtors and, you know, other folks who were just, nothing wrong with realtors, they're a necessary member of the team. But bottom line is, they're not trained to know all this stuff and or even transfer that information to you in a way that would be helpful for you to understand so that you can make a logical, educated decision. And so the other thing that I have on my list that is important, very, very important to the whole process, is called programming. Now, a lot of people don't understand really what real true programming is. True programming is, or the way we do it, is to be able to list and qualify all the things that you would like to have or you need to have in your project. And that could be everything. I mean, what are all the things we have in our questionnaire, Han? I mean, it's just endless, isn't it?
It's almost like, it's 7 pages long.
Yeah.
And it has tons of questions. It's involving what do you want? What do you have? What do you like? What's your plan? Who's going to do what? Who's going to use what? It's not arduous, but it's a process. It's a process that helps you to verbalize what you're looking for. It helps you to share your vision with your team. It identifies your short-term needs, your long-term need, down to the equipment that you are planning, the type of treatment that you're planning down the road. It's almost like a roadmap to allow the entire team, including yourself, to guide you through the project, to guide you through the entire design process so that when the project is being laid out, being designed and planned, it meet all of your it meet all of your criteria.
It is actually, you're right, Han. It is a roadmap, and actually, it's a very important step in the master planning of your path of where you want to go from where you're at here today to where you want to be 5, 10, 15, whatever years down the road. And it's crucial. And it also is outside the scope of the normal AIA architect owner contract. It's an extra. It's something different. And how do you like to put it? You don't know what you don't know, right? Isn't that the same?
Yeah, that is it. Jim, the architecture design programming, that is different than, let me say, a questionnaire that identify, colors and finished palettes, right?
Oh, yeah. Much, much different. One's great for an interior design, but we'll actually do absolutely nothing when it comes to designing a project.
So is it, do you recommend that is, let me see, we do the design programming virtually for every project.
Yes.
Whether it's a renovation, whether it's a renovation, addition, or from the ground up, because the process is very similar, maybe not at the same intensity when it comes to, buying a raw piece of land and develop it, but it's the protocol, the process is pretty much the same. What do you need? What do you want? And things like that. So it's an exercise that's outside of the normal realm, but it should not be excluded from the process, and is usually done before the first line is drawn, right?
Right. It actually forms the foundation of the whole process, because without it, just like a roadmap, if you don't have a map as to where you're going, or how you going to get there, you can't. You need to have this, we like to see the written verbalization of everything. And a lot of times you can't fill it all out because you don't even know what the answers on some of these things are. And that's where you work back and forth with us and the other team to eventually fill it out to the best you can, to be able to verbally and in writing lay down what your map is going to be and what you want to have happen today, tomorrow, and the next day. So, and there's a ton of other things that the architect would be asked to do or could be asked to do. And, when you say who's responsible for what, but in a nutshell, those are kind of the bigger ones. Now, integrated into that, and I want to make sure we leave enough time for the next two segments, which has to do with the engineers and then the builder, and then eventually you. The engineers, and there's potentially a bunch of them. Now, you say, what do I need engineers for? I have an architect, don't I? Well, yes, but the architect is not the engineering entity. Typically, engineers are extra, or at least defined and broken out. We break them out as individuals who you get things like civil engineer, you got electrical, mechanical, plumbing, and structural engineer. You may or may not need those folks on your project. It all depends. If it's a new build, you're going to need them all. If it's a renovation, you might not need a structural engineer, or you might not need the civil engineer. You're probably going to need the mechanical, electrical, plumbing, because you're going to want that in your building. And these people are specialists. They know all the codes. They know all the constructability. They know all the systems. And they integrate into our work along with the program that we've created based upon the questionnaire. so that the final documents, the drawings that come out, the blueprints, as one would call them, which tells the builder what needs to be built, has all that information in it, so that the builder can then bid the thing properly and eventually get the permit and build the project. Now, Han, there's a bunch of other engineers that we've sometimes had on the project, from IT guys to acoustics to specialty stuff. We've had a few, haven't we?
Yeah. I think this is one of those English words that I don't say very well. You say acquisition for acoustic. What would be the that is something that from time to time I get involved in discussion about that, but it seems like it's an entity that should be integrated into the design of dental office more often, right? Because the biggest complaint that I read about and experience is noise. Noise issues in dental offices is like it's huge, but it's not often handled well. So anyway, they are an engineer that need to be involved. We also have fire suppression engineer, which deal with naturally sprinklers and things of that nature. So there, it all depends on the scope of what your project needs. It dictate who's going to be involved in the project. Jim?
Right. Now, one of the other areas that we like to, in this particular category, we like to put, and that's your equipment supplier. We actually look at your equipment supplier as one of the engineers on the job, or on the team. I'm sorry. They're providing technical information and technical data and technical aspects about the equipment, electrical, plumbing, the utilities, where it needs to be placed, and that kind of stuff. And that's integrated into the project. So that, you know, your equipment supplier is one of the folks that are in there as part of this team. And we all know what they're responsible for, and they're crucial to the team.
Jim, there's another piece that are not normal in the in the design or a dental office project. One is I would often call them theme. You have interior designer, and then you have I call them theme consultant. In other words, if you happen to be, let's say, an orthodontist or a pediatric dentist, and you want your office aesthetic to convey a theme like, let's say, Disney, or a train station or an outdoor environment or something like that, there are specialists who services focus around that. Again, every team member need to be able to work together, collaborate. The project is not, they should not be the island that everybody built around. And communication, all that stuff is very crucial. Interior design is another one of those things that I think has a lot of opportunity for mishaps. Architects by training should and very capable of doing interior design, selecting materials and specifying it, where it need to go and things like that. But often for some reason, it gets split up and be handled by somebody else who may or may not be well versed or have deep understanding of their of the interior design profession, and it could create a really challenging environment for your project. Jim?
Right. Well, definitely you have to integrate the engineers and the other team members at the right time in the process. Bringing anybody in too late really upsets the apple cart. It really does create a situation where everybody's trying to play catch up. And effectively, it costs you time and costs you money. And so it's not something we'd advise. We always advise you have your team, complete team, integrated from day one or very early. Now, we've got like 15 more minutes here, and I want to talk about the next two categories, and that's one, the builder, and then two, you. The builder, their main responsibility is when we talked a little bit about this before in previous shows, but their responsibility is to construct the project. Their responsibility is the means and methods to be able to take everything that's been done to date, all the design ideas, the construction documents, everything that we've all put down on paper. We've had all the meetings, we've had all the reviews. You finally get the permits around that stuff, and take it and actually build it. And whether it's a renovation, the new build, it doesn't matter. It's their responsibility to create the construction, not to design it in this process that we're talking about. That's our responsibility, but to actually build it. Now, we're not going to tell, we don't tell the builder how many screws to put in a particular wall or a particular board. And at the same time, we don't ask the builder to tell us what should or shouldn't be done in the way of design. So the means and methods is really the aspect of how can you get this thing built in the most efficient and effective way that meets the criteria that we lay out on a particular set of drawings. Now, who's responsible to get the permit, Han?
That one is a bit more flexible. Some municipalities required it to be the contractor. Some municipalities would allow the owner, the architect. So it all depends on the particular requirement within your jurisdiction. For us, because every project has a schedule, and if we can shorten the schedule, it's a great thing because you get the project faster and it costs you less. But when it comes to permit, we usually like to, the moment that we send out the document for bid, it goes into the city for permit review. And in that case, we do it because the contractor have not been determined.
We don't actually get the permit. We start the process with the plan review. The actual getting of the permit is the contractor's responsibility because the planning, the building and planning department folks will not give you a permit, won't even give the builder or the architect or the owner a permit unless the builder is identified. So eventually the builder has to be identified to be able to get it. But you're right, Han, we do start off the process. And we'll work very closely to help you create the application, you got to pay a fee and all that kind of good stuff. But bottom line is, who's responsible for getting the permit? It's the builder. Because he's the one that needs it to be able to start the project. Another important thing. Go ahead.
The municipality require that the permit is to be issued to the contractor that have been awarded the work.
Exactly, because they want to know who they're dealing with. They want to know that if that contractor is licensed, they want to know just a ton of things, everything from their insurance capability and what subcontractors. We've had it where you have to give a list of subcontractors that are on the project. I mean, everything. It sometimes is very arduous, and amazing is the amount of detail that's required, and that falls under the builder's responsibility, your general contractor. He or she is responsible for coordination with the subs, coordination with the inspectors, coordination with anybody and everybody that comes into that and onto that project while it's being constructed. In actuality, why that building is under construction, it's really not your building. It's you are actually not. If you look in their contract, you'll find a lot of times in their contract it's stated that the contractor has total and complete responsibility for that property and that project until the day that it's finished and handed over to you. So a lot of times, and it all has to do with insurance and all kinds of other issues, you may not be able to walk onto the project unless the contractor is there. So just a little FYI.
That's important.
It's very important. And,
yes, it's important.
Yeah. He or she, the contractor, has got total responsibility for that project. One of the real reasons for that is not because they're control freaks, is because construction sites are one of the most dangerous places you can go. Construction site is one of the most dangerous places you can physically be in. Most of the time, insurance companies and insurance agencies mandate that you're not allowed on the project. What? You've seen projects, hon, we've seen them all the time, but you ever go down the road and see a project or a building that's under construction and it's got a 10-foot-tall chain link fence around it?
All the time.
Why do you think that is? That's to keep everybody
out. The contractor is pretty smart. Okay.
Yeah.
It actually, like Jim said, it's very dangerous. And you can... It's a normal habit or a normal event, and this is openly discussed all the time. A dentist having his building, being built, and you take his friends and his families and his dogs and cats onto the site to visit after hours. That should not happen, okay, for your safety. The contractor need that site to be secure, and the right protocol is that you visit while it's being used or being worked on, coordinate that time and stuff like that with the contractor, because they're responsible for the safety of whoever come onto that site at all times.
Exactly.
Jim?
Exactly, and that's why you see them spend that kind of money to rent 10-foot-tall chain link fences and place those around their property to block that off. Because, okay, if you're going to climb up a 10-foot-tall chain link fence, one could argue that that person didn't do that by accident, and so they purposely trespassed and effectively they got hurt. They couldn't come back and sue the builder, sue you, sue everybody and their brother. And, most juries and judges would understand, that's case law kind of thing. Yeah, they really did trespass, and so they're responsible for their own actions. And insurance companies require that because, unfortunately, in this litigious day and age that we live in, crap like that happens. And it's all about protecting you. But, the contractor or the builder is responsible for, physically building the building, getting it to the point that he gets the final inspections, getting it to the point that they get what's called the final occupancy permit. Now, that final occupancy permit is a very important piece that you must have. Han, how did the building inspector that we were talking with the other day put it? There's a contract between the owner and the building department when they give out a permit. Is that how they put it?
Yeah, actually, they say the permit is the legal agreement between the city and the building owner that the city had granted them the ability to build based on the document that had been generated for that building. Okay, so at the tail end, when you have done, or when the contractor had built and done everything that was designed to code, to safety standard and all that stuff, then they sign off and give you the certificate of occupancy. And with that document, then you can move forward, open your door for business.
Right. You can let the
without
public
it,
in.
You can't.
Yeah, because we're talking about buildings that will allow the public to enter. We're not talking about a house. We're talking about a public facility, meaning that you will let patients come in your front door. And so their most important thing is dealing with the life and safety and welfare of the public. And so that final certificate of occupancy is crucial. And the one person that's responsible for getting that is the contractor, the builder. Will, of course, help and assist and provide support, but the contractor is responsible for the coordination and the actual acquisition of that, because he has to go through all the inspections. He has to work it out with the local building inspector and everybody else. I mean, everything from fire marshal, the building inspector, if there's an elevator, you've got to take an elevator certificate from the state, you name it. There could be a dozen other entities that are involved. So in the last few minutes we have, I want to talk about you when it comes to who's responsible. What's the owner responsible for?
Initially, the owner will be responsible for providing any and all information so that the design team can work on the, can start on the design. The owner is responsible for giving direction to the team and basically paying for the work. Do I have anything
else? Well,
that's
true. And in our process, the owner, is actually a very important team member throughout the whole process. Not just, here's my project, call me when it's done.
You don't want that.
Yeah, you don't want that. It's not good for you, and it's definitely not good for us. You want to be completely involved in this project. So keep in mind, if you're looking at or thinking about doing a project, whether it's going to be a renovation or a new build, keep in mind, this is going to take some time. You need to schedule some time in your day to be able to say, okay, I need this much time every week or every other day or whatever it is to be able to answer the questions that are asked. Review the situations. Review what's going on. Sure, you've got people like us, and you've got engineers, and you've got a builder and all that stuff. Yeah. So you're not going to be involved in the day-to-day operations of everything, but you will be involved in all the issues that come up. You'll be involved in a lot of things that you've never been involved. If you've never done a project before, you'll be surprised at how much involvement you will be required to be in. We've seen owners that got to the point, Juan, that were so overwhelmed with the amount of work that it was taking that they hired what's called as an owner's representative. So they hired somebody to represent them on the project. And that can be done. I don't know if we want to, we'll leave that for another show because it's a long discussion on whether it's a good or a bad thing. But bottom line is you're going to be asked a lot of questions. We love it to be able to give you all the information so that you can have and make educated decisions. But you're going to be asked a lot of questions. Could be everything from, oh crap, the carpet that was picked out is no longer available. Well, in this case, oh crap, the carpet that was specified isn't what we should put in now because COVID came across the landscape, and now we're going to go with a sheet hospital grade flooring that will replace all the carpet. Okay. I mean, all those kind of things happen. And so there'll be lots of questions and lots of things that have to be discussed. So be ready to be involved. Every month you're going to get a pay application. And it's going to, hopefully, if the process is done right, generated by the builder, get to us to certify. We review it against the contract, against what was done out of the job, give it to you to sign off on, and then you pass it off onto the bank. That happens every month. You could be asked to be at a job site meeting every week. And sometimes those go for a couple hours, depending on the complexity of the project. If it's a small interior renovation project, maybe not very long. But if it's a brand new build, it could literally happen every week for a couple hours to go over every aspect of what's going on in that project. So, yeah. And then everything from coordination of the schedule. I mean, we've got to talk about the schedule. The builder's in charge of the schedule, but you need to be aware of where it's at because it affects you. When he's getting close or he or she is getting close to getting it done, then you have to do things like getting ready for the move and getting that all organized and scheduled. Your equipment supplier, who's bringing in the equipment and things like, okay, you're using some of your equipment from your existing facility and you're buying some brand new stuff. How is that all going to be coordinated? That all has to be worked through. We'll help you. We'll help you with that, but it's requires your involvement. On what I missed, I just hit the highlights, but I know there's a ton more.
No, I think you hit a lot of high point. The bottom line is, there is no such thing as a turnkey project, even though it sounds kind of sexy. But that simply means that if somebody says, hey, we'll do a turnkey project for you, that simply means that you relegate the decision-making on everything to somebody else. You may not like the decision they make. You may not like the quality. You might not like the things they do because it didn't meet your expectations. So what Jim and I are saying is that you will be involved at some level. Some are more in depth and some are not. But it's your time investment will be required. Now Jim talked about the schedule. Everybody on the team can affect the schedule, and that's including you, the owner. Everything that you do or don't do can shorten the schedule or lengthen the schedule based on how you process information and require documents and making decisions. So it's crucial that you become like the best team player on the team. Jim?
Absolutely. In actuality, we've had instances where the owner because of whatever reason, failed to make decisions in a timely manner during construction, it resulted in the contractor basically saying, well, because of the lack of decisions, it has delayed the project. You've delayed my project. You cost me money. I had to either put something in storage, or I couldn't get something accomplished in a certain time, or I had to get a different subcontractor. And he came back to the owner with a change order for that additional money. So be forewarned, not making decisions in a timely manner can cost you money, real money. And that particular change order system that I'm talking about was not cheap. There were a substantial amount of money that was being talked about. So, again, you know, be prepared to be integrated and be prepared to be involved, because it just makes for a better project. And really, like, you know, we're here for one reason and one for your reason only, is to give you the very best final solution for your money. At the same time, we want you to be able to make those decisions in such a way that you can get that project built as soon as possible without a whole lot of delays. Hon?
And Jim, can you say be involved but not micromanage?
Yes, without a doubt. And see, that's the other thing. You know, we're the specialist when it comes to designing a project. We're the architects. That's what we're trained for. That's why we have, you know, decades of experience in dealing with. Your builder hopefully is very experienced and has decades of experience in building. Your engineer is very experienced and has decades of experience in doing dental offices. All right. So let the experts do the things that we do. Now, you're the dentist. You're the expert at dentistry, but you're not the expert at building. So, like Hans says, don't micromanage. Let us sweat the details. Let your team sweat the details and get those things accomplished. But be there and be part of the overall team so that the thing can run as smooth as possible, because there's nothing better than a smooth running project that gets done on time and hopefully at or under budget. When that happens, thank your lucky stars, because unfortunately in the construction world, if anything can go wrong, it a lot of times does. And a lot of times it's out of people's controls, and it's a matter of, okay, who's playing fireman today, and you know, what fire hat are we putting on today because of this particular situation? So, well, hopefully
you know,
that,
we often see, yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
No, go ahead.
I see. You know, we often say, "I love it when a plan comes together well."
Exactly, and it can. We've had many very successful smooth operating projects with the right team, and it's a enjoyable experience. Don't get it wrong. You know, it's not like, oh my God, this is the worst thing we've ever gone through in my whole life. It doesn't have to be that way. So at least hopefully tonight you've learned a few things, been given some information that will help you decide on what team member or team members you'd like to be as part of your team doing your particular project. Not everybody's the same. It's not like apples and apples, you know. One architect is not the exact same as another architect, and one builder is not the exact same as another builder. How do we like to say it, Han? The lowest price might not be the best. And
that's right.
Yeah. So, you know, it is a difficult process to be able to make a decision on who you want to, you know, be on the team. It's extremely difficult process to make a decision on who you want to lead the team. And so we hope it's been at least been helpful in that regard. as always, if you have any questions or you'd like to talk about something specific to your project, please feel give us a call. You can catch us on our website. You can, you know, send us an email, catch us on the phone. We're here to help, and that's what we do. We like doing it. We love doing it. And again, thanks for the time. We look forward to next week. And Han, we're slightly over time, but I'll let you have the last word.
Appreciate you spending the time with us. I certainly had fun. I hope you learned a lot of things. Again, like Jim said, if you have questions, call us. Don't be shy. It's called Straight Talk, so we'll just give it to you straight. All right? Everybody stay well, stay healthy. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.